All right. Okay. We are about to kick off.
What is that app you have?
I'm not in an app. That's just, oh, ACR.
Okay, Frank,
oh.
You ready?
You know, did I tell you about that?
Uh-uh.
Yeah, I love that app.
Do you?
Yes.
Yeah, I've had it for a while now.
Stand by.
What can a plus-size model and body image coach teach us about love and acceptance? We'll find out on this edition of Frank Relationships.
You're listening to Frank Relationships with Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Frank Love.
Yes. As always, those are my babies. Thanks for getting daddy started today. Mwah! Speaker and body image coach Dr. Felicia Clark is with us today. And I'm curious, can a woman be too sexy for love? That actually sounds like a song. Anyway.
It was.
What you got, Dr. Clark?
Absolutely, yes. In fact, too many women nowadays focus on sex appeal over substance, and it simply just serves the ego, not the spirit. So if you want love, you have to come from the spirit.
And what are some of the things that women might do, or some women do, that appeal more to the sexy side and not the spirit side?
Our whole system of grooming when we're younger is to play up our sexual features. And so, of course, we know certain body parts are considered sexual. But when you understand the male psyche and subconscious mating, like the hormones, the look, things like shiny hair is actually a mating signal. There are many mating signals we just give off. Red lips is a mating signal. And so we're just trained by red lipstick and put hairspray on, but we're not maybe intentionally trying to be approached sexually. But those are fertility indicators, and fertility indicators being played up or hypersexualized gets a sex reaction from men.
And what's the history on those fertility indicators?
Obviously, you know, the species has to survive. Mm-hmm. So males are born with higher amounts of testosterone, which we know, but that makes him pursue and aggressively play out a DNA code that he has. And it's encoded in men to make sure the species survives, and women too. But men have that extra aggression to pursue and actively make sure the species survives. And so this is why men have a higher sex drive and have a higher pursuits of sex, because in his DNA, it's important for the species to survive. And typically and historically in current day, men have a lower life expectancy. So there's more of an urgency for him to procreate. Even if he's not intentionally trying to procreate, in his DNA, that's what's motivating him to look at women sexually.
Welcome to Frank Relationships, a show for you, my brethren, who, like me, are too young to be considered old and too old to be considered young. It's also for those of you who love and support us. We're here to provide weekly wisdom, conversation, and the information that'll help create loving and flexible parents and partners. I'm Frank Love, and you can find me, my blog, and my various social media incarnations at franklove.com. If you're listening to the show on Blog Talk Radio, please follow us, and then via iTunes, please subscribe so that you can effortlessly get the show each week. Also, if you're enjoying the show, and of course you are, please give us a favorable iTunes rating and please share it with your family and friends on your favorite social media platform. We are always looking for new social media friends, so please help us help our communities by spreading the word about the show. Greetings to my super-duper co-host, Nancy Goldring.
Good morning, Frank.
How the heck are you?
Awesome.
Great. Okay. Today's guest is a plus-size cover model and mathematics curriculum developer. Put those two skill sets together and you'll find the woman that's cracked the code on how women can change a negative body image into a positive one, no matter her age, size, or circumstance. Her Huffington Post blog is read around the world, where she shares shocking data like women average 13 negative body image thoughts per day. She believes that it's time to turn the tide. And to do that, she's founded Body Peace University. Through Body Peace University, she speaks to college students, women's groups, and counseling organizations on how to become a negative body image. So, if you, like me, want to know why women feel like plastic surgery will help them find a man, why can't a woman change how she looks to please her man and still be happy, and how our guest can help a woman become attractive in one day. That's right, one day. Then stay tuned as your Frank Relationship team talks with none other than Dr. Felicia Clark. Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
You bet.
Great.
Before we get too deep in today's subject matter, I want to check in and see what's going on in the news or research or something of that nature. Don't be bashful, please. We want your thoughts.
Okay.
So, what are the complex realities of interracial marriages?
What are the complex realities?
Yes. You think there are any?
Oh, my goodness, yeah. I'm certain there are.
Okay. All right. Dr. Clark, you're from Colorado, and you see quite a bit of that. So, you got any light to shine on it?
Sure. I mean, some relationships are just two people that fall in love, and I don't think there's an issue there. But sometimes the relationship is one person trying to escape their culture, and that could be on both sides or just one of the ethnicities is just trying to escape their own reality and culture. And then what I've seen a lot, because we have a culture of many interracial couples in where I live, and there's one mate really still feels a sense of superiority to the other. I see that a lot. So they don't really want to be involved with the family. They think they just got, quote unquote, the special person of that ethnicity, and they want to take them away and kind of separate.
Is that what, do you see more one race to the other with that dynamic?
You know, it's common because there's all kind of different, interracial could be all kind of different races. So I think a lot of people do that.
Mm. Okay. All right. Nancy, you're in Baltimore. Anything there?
Yeah, it's funny that Felicia makes that point. We have an interracial couple in our neighborhood, and I've known the guy all my life.
Black or white?
He's black. Uh-huh. And so his girlfriend is a white woman, and so our community is a community. You know, you see people, you say hello, you know, we engage each other. Mm-hmm. It's not like somebody's knocking on your door every minute to be in your business, but it's a sense of community.
Mm-hmm. Do you share sugar? Do you borrow sugar?
No, I don't borrow sugar.
Okay.
I borrow agave, which no one has, so I have to get it myself.
Okay, but you're not above borrowing agave.
No,
okay,
absolutely not.
All right.
So what sticks out for me about what Felicia said is that I actually feel that from her.
I feel
from her this sense of I'm like they're in this bubble. Like it's me and Donald, and I'm interested in Donald. I'm not interested in being a part of Donald's world. that isn't the one I crafted or the one I say hypothetically found him in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not even a relative of his. So I'm thinking, man, Wow. You don't even, if she can help it, I don't even think she would say hello.
Might she just be an introvert?
An introvert doesn't say hello?
I mean, sometimes they don't.
Interesting to me. Yeah. I definitely would not have branded her, per se, an introvert. And I think they've been in the neighborhood so long.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that it's bizarre. And maybe if I gave her the license that you're mentioning, if she was an introvert, then I have to say, am I kind of saying, as if she were black, she might be some other way.
Mm.
She might mm-hmm. be the same way.
Right.
You know, and actually there's a young black couple that lives directly across the street from me that I don't find particularly
charming.
Social. You know what I mean? Charming. I like charming. I don't find them particularly social, and they don't necessarily seek out an opportunity to interact. But if you speak to them, they speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I just find that to be a basic common courtesy among people of mm-hmm. all races. And if she can get away with it, she wouldn't.
So do you not let her get away with it? Are you in her face like, good morning?
Oh, if I see her, I say, hey, you know, good morning. And then she'll make her little gesture. But if I didn't, she wouldn't either.
Okay.
She wouldn't either. But I think that certainly the issues that are involved in an interracial relationship are certainly real.
Mm-hmm.
And it's funny. I notice in my own thinking, like if I see a couple, an interracial couple, let's say a white man and an Asian woman,
mm-hmm.
or an Indian or a, you know, Southeast Asian guy and a white woman, or like I tend to think that the complexities there are so much less intense than if one of the partners was African American.
Mm. That's interesting.
Yeah, I don't even know where that comes from. Like even if the guy was African,
mm-hmm.
I somehow see the dynamic, the interracial, the interplay of the races and the cultures as somehow a lot less intense than if the mate, whether it was male or female, mm-hmm. is African American.
Mm. And does that mean you because you're African American, you know that there's some complexities there. So you can kind of put yourself in that situation and you are not, you're just not there in terms of other races.
Well, it's not like.
Not in a bad way. It's just you.
Well, I just think, man, if this got complicated, like if a race riot broke out or mm-hmm. if there was some deep, deep race issue going on, like how does that affect me in my relationship and what camp am I in? Mm. That becomes kind of like the curiosity that I have.
Okay.
And is it an issue that could end up dividing? Would a race issue in the general populace
mm-hmm.
end up causing a
divide
problem
in that marriage?
In my relationship.
Okay.
I don't know.
You got anything on that, Jeff?
The only thing I'll add to it is external circumstances, meaning family, extended mm-hmm. family, perception of the relationship. Black women hate the white woman who's dating the black guy because that's my man. That's my community. That's my society. That's my, you know, family.
But what about the black woman who's dating? I saw a black woman at the museum, at the Science Center, and she was with her husband and they had like three boys.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, cool, they're married. Mm-hmm. I liked that.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't find myself tripping on it at all.
Take yourself out of the equation. I'm talking generalities.
Yeah, no. Yeah. I got you. But mm-hmm. I noticed you're not at all wrong when you say, but if you see a black man with a white woman,
mm-hmm.
then you go, you know, what did our former, one of our past guests say? you give shade. I've had to work myself out of shade.
Look, as far as society has come, and it's come a long way, we just had a biracial president for 8 years.
Right.
Acceptance, understanding, tolerance, losing the stereotypes and quote-unquote ignorance, which I think is innocence in some ways, you know?
Yeah.
So again, we've come a long way. I see a biracial child, I call them a tomorrow child, because that's what our society should accept and be. But relationships are difficult. This adds another dynamic to it. Yeah. The in-laws, what am I going to eat on this holiday when I go to their house? How different is it going to be? Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not listening to Maroon 5. I'm listening to Drake, you know, whatever it might be.
Right.
You know, as minor and as petty as that sounds, these
it's
are
real.
All dynamics that go into it.
Yeah.
You know, I want my son to play baseball. Oh, no, he's going to play chess. Blah, 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 and on and on and on. So it's cultural. It is has a lot to do with not just genealogy, but, you know, how do we want our extended family to be?
How do we want our child to identify?
Look, years ago it was religion, and maybe it still is in a lot of circles.
Right.
So again, being in a melting pot, you're going to deal with these issues. Again, my perspective on it is relationships are hard enough as it is. You know, this just adds another thing. Hey, what about a biracial same-sex marriage? Here we go. There's another there's another show for you.
Right, isn't it?
Speaking of, it's funny. We've just talked about issues related to recent past shows. So the religion part, Naomi Schaefer, Amy Lewis.
Yes.
In terms of just the
raising the biracial child.
Yeah. We've been playing with this a little bit.
Yes, yes.
And the only thing I'll add is, or piggybacking on what you said, was when I was reading something related to this topic, there was a black woman who said when she sees another black woman with a white male in a relationship, she's like, "You go, girl. You do what you got to do, you know, glad you opened the door for
doing
yourself."
Doing something different.
But if she sees a black male with a white female, she feels
betrayed?
Like, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. So, I mean, this was a woman who was now in a interracial marriage.
Oh, wow.
So
wow.
It's fascinating. It's fascinating.
Yeah.
Anyway, Dr. Clark, you want the last word on this?
You know, what's interesting is that issue of just blending cultures. I think that's even a bigger issue than skin color. One of the things I learned through modeling is that wealthy Asian businessmen think that full-figured black women is their, like, fantasy woman. But the average black woman in America just doesn't click with that type of man. Like, you just don't even know that they notice you, and there's no background to be with them, and the cultures just don't blend well.
Now, how did you find that out?
I would be asked out by men that I'd be kind of very surprised. You know, I just, and they're a lot of times, you know, culturally Asian, so their command of English isn't that well, and it just didn't blend. But they were nice, but it just, and I didn't date one like a boyfriend, but I would be introduced, and, you know, we'd kind of talk because he wanted to meet me, but just culturally there just wasn't overlap.
So what might you say? Were you just like, huh?
Yeah, because they're physically smaller a lot too, so that different, and yeah, I was surprised.
Wow,
interesting.
That is not a sight.
You've opened up a window for us, Felicia.
maybe there's a Buddha thing going on.
Oh my goodness!
No,
I don't know. Oh, anyway. All right, Dr. Clark. You've noted in your book Dating Devotion, you say men who are natural providers provide the very best to women who receive well, who express gratitude, and who raise the value of what is provided. I thought that was absolutely profound. And so before you jump in, I'm going to say it is I give more when it seems like she appreciates it. It's just, mm-hmm. and I'm more invested, and it just matters to me.
Yes.
So there you go, Dr. Clark. Hey, what you got?
Yes. In my coaching practice, when women just come to me trying to ask me to give them a makeover, I say, get an energetic makeover. The beautiful feeling that you want is going to come from you being receptive, not from you changing your looks. And so receiving well, receiving masculine energy, receiving him as he is, receiving what he provides for you, and honoring the fact that, you know, he labored for that. He sacrificed for that. And he just needs you to appreciate that. And appreciate means raise the value, like homes appreciate. Mm-hmm. Appreciate doesn't mean just say thank you. It means you take it and it's fuel for something bigger. And when that dynamic is present, it nurtures a man's masculine energy to do more.
How do you know that? That's a big deal.
In my own relationships and just trying to be happy myself, because I grew up in a family where there was a lot of tension in my household. So I had a two-parent household, and people always say, oh, that's great, you know, there should be a man in the home, et cetera. But it was constant fighting and arguing and a lot of contentiousness. So I just wanted to learn how to be happy because I didn't know how, and I didn't see that growing up. And so I learned about these type of things that you need to choose a man based on, look at him, how he is, and is he the right provider and protector for you? And he's the right protector if you feel safe with him. Mm-hmm. And so that made so much sense because that was missing in many of the relationships I had seen growing up. The woman wasn't safe. And then so the feeling of safety, and then is he the right type of provider? Now, women think, oh, get a rich man, get a man with a great job. That doesn't mean he's a provider. A man doesn't automatically take care of you just because he has resources. So you have to look, is he concerned about your well-being? Things like, you know, if you're cold, does he feel compelled to make you warm? When you start seeing that type of dynamic, that's the right dynamic to be happy and for a woman to receive from him, because, and also to submit. And I believe in spiritual submission, but what women are taught are ego submission, and that never works. But spiritual submission, because a man is trying to give you his best, it just happens very naturally, and both men and women are happy with that dynamic.
And what is spiritual submission?
That means that instead of your ego saying, well, he's a man, I better follow him because he's entitled, or, you know, the things that we've been taught. If you find yourself talking yourself into following him, then that's ego-based. Mm-hmm. If a spiritual submission is, you know, he's a man of honor and you're in good hands and it makes sense to do the things that he recommends for you, it makes sense to follow him in life. You're in good hands. Your spirit knows that he is there for your good.
Interesting. So, Felicia, I'm noticing, mm-hmm. as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about, what do you do when you have to concern yourself with whether the man may be, have a nurturing or providing, say, spirit in even his actions? And the question always comes up for me, what is he buying something? Because oftentimes the more invested a man gets in you, so yes, he gives, he nurtures, he provides. However, there's
a ownership thing
going on.
Okay.
Oftentimes, mm-hmm. I know in one relationship in particular, I found that the man was incredibly attentive, caregiving, nurturing, and provided. Mm-hmm. However, there seemed to be a direct correlation between how much he gave and how much more he felt he was entitled to determine my actions. And so that didn't work for me.
So he said, you got to put out if I'm gone.
No, actually, he didn't. However, there were, let's say, inferences mm-hmm. that there were a couple of different inferences. So I also noticed that the more he gave me, the more he got, what's the word I want to use?
Possessive.
Possessive, did you say?
Mm-hmm.
Possessive for sure. However, he also, he began to say things to me that he wasn't saying before mm-hmm. he, say, made this, you know, paid for this mm-hmm. or bought that or gave. I was just like, he didn't talk to me like that before.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothered me too. And I thought, well, it's almost like the veil could keep coming down, coming down, coming down. Not on a nicer, more warm and loving human being, but on one who felt that he could be maybe even, it's a strong word to use, but a little more abusive.
Mm. Interesting.
Because he was giving.
Mm-hmm.
It was like he was paying. I have a friend who has a term, paying the cost to be the boss. Mm-hmm. So, and I found that if
Is this a male friend or a female friend?
No, it's female friend.
Okay.
I'm paying the part. I'm paying the cost to be the boss. When I walk in here, the lights still come on, and you didn't pay for that. That's like one of our lines. I love it. So still, what comes up for me, Felicia, is how do you balance that? Like, I was willing to, if he'd say, listen, you need to do this, you know, okay, fine, and I would do it. You know, tail light's out. My tail light could be out for a month. You need to get that fixed. And I would get it fixed the same day, you know. Mm. So in that regard, I would follow him. I did feel in good hands.
Mm-hmm.
However, I just felt like this guy is, you know,
long term,
over
I got
the
problems
top.
Ahead.
I've known him for years, but I just would never go beyond a certain point with him because I felt like I could not trust him to respect me as a person the more involved I got with him because he would take on this kind of owner. Like, I own you now. You're mm-hmm. mine. You're this. And I'm like, you know what? That just doesn't turn me on.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah. Before you jump in, Dr. Clark, I think when it becomes an issue is when it's an issue.
You're
or
right.
when you actually feel the way you felt is when it's kind of a no-go. When he's not doing the job for you or the relationship.
Mm.
And when it's working, it's seamless.
Right.
You don't even notice it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So, okay. Mm-hmm. All right, that's my take. What do you got from Colorado?
Yeah, I think he's not the right provider for you. He's a good provider, but not the right provider for you. And women really have to feel that. I've experienced that too, by the way, Nancy. And so there was a man who wanted to buy me a house. And that sounds like, wow, dream come true. But it would be a total trap. He felt like, you know, stay in the house all the time and just be there all the time, you know.
He had purchased a pretty cage.
And no, you know, I'd rather buy my own house because, you know, I call it the prison house. I don't want that. And so part of receiving well is to understand if there are strings attached. And sometimes they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they're not. And it's okay to reject the gift, but honor the intention of the provision.
Mm-hmm. Was this one of the Asian gentlemen?
Go ahead.
That
here he goes. So are the Asian men buying the houses, Felicia? Because I'm here to tell you. I feel like an investor right now.
You feel like an investment.
An investment. Yes.
But you're not a full figured woman.
Zeke's,
you'll put
down
on some
the street.
Pounds.
Let me tell you where I'm gonna start with this thing. They have an awesome butter croissant and incredible monkey bread awesome.
Down the street from here?
Right down the street okay, from here. Right. I can get started.
All right.
No shame to my game.
House anyone? I got some monkey bread right here. You got to get me a house? I'm eating.
Oh, okay. My goodness. Save us from ourselves,
yeah, bad,
Felicia.
Bad Nancy. Bad Nancy. And bad Frank. Okay. Back to you, Felicia.
See, now I forgot what I'm supposed to be saying. You guys are funny.
It's because we cut up so bad sometimes.
I was asking, was it an Asian gentleman
that offered to buy you a house?
No.
Okay.
Oh, Felicia. Felicia.
No, he was African American. He was a very successful businessman, and he had gotten divorced right before. I was his first girlfriend after divorce, and he just had all these like issues. Mm-hmm. And so that's what it was, that he didn't want to live together because he still wasn't over his marriage that ended, but he wanted me to be close to him. Mm-hmm. So he wanted to buy a house close to him. He never asked me what I wanted in a house. It was just more of a possession control thing. So a lot of women would say, wow, a man would do that for you. That's so nice. It really wasn't nice. I mean, and I get it that like it presents as a very generous gift, but it was very much a trap.
Right, right.
What about plastic surgery? Why do women feel that plastic surgery will help them find a man? Is that true?
Well, what kind of man are you trying to find? So, to find men that want to have sex with you more, yes. To find a man that really wants to be with you and caretake you, no. And the reason is women get plastic surgery because we have this sort of perfection gene that we're just sort of born with. And we believe if we can perfect our beauty, then love will emanate from that. And there's actually a subconscious correlation between that, because women are supposed to be the spiritual gateway in the relationship. And there is a type of perfectionist of being, just a human being. You just be. Mm-hmm. And there's like a perfect feeling. But advertisers and our culture have manipulated that feeling into getting us to participate in the beauty industry. And it sort of hijacks that sort of brain coding we have and says, well, the perfect feeling will come when you look perfect. So that's not true, but that's what a lot of women believe. And so the plastic surgery is seeking this perfect look, kind of like the Cinderella fantasy. The handsome prince looks at her and she looks so perfect, and he's in love and they want to, you know, walk off into the sunset happily ever after. That's not reality. And if a man only picks you based on physical features, you won't be happy. And the more you fix yourself, in air quotes, because you're not broken, but if you think you're fixing yourself by surgery, the more you're investing in ego than spirit. Mm-hmm. And even if you did find a man that married you, it's going to be a difficult relationship because spirit didn't show up. And it's going to be unfulfilling. And it probably won't last. So I'm not against women having that. Originally, plastic surgery was developed because we had a war. So after World War I, a lot of plastic surgeons came on to kind of fix the soldiers who had been injured back to a sense of normal. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of, they use that same thinking to take a woman who's normal and fix you, you know, and you were not a soldier in war, you know. So I think plastic surgery, if you've been in an accident, that makes you feel better. You know, if your body was changed because of some circumstance, and then you want to put it back to how it was, or, you know, to not feel what you may feel is a deformity, then that makes sense.
Right.
But when you're natural, healthy, you're made the way you're supposed to be, but you still feel deformed and you want the same surgery that people who've had major accidents have had, there's something going on mentally that's not healthy. There's actually a correlation between breast enhancement and suicide 10 years later. And doctors know this, and they're dealing with should they do some type of psychological profile of healthy women who come for breast surgery.
Mm. Wow.
I'm not surprised, but
I never dreamed. I used to think, oh, I'm going to get implants one day.
Really?
What?
You really thought that?
When I was younger, I used to think.
Younger, like last night?
Night before last. When I was... Can I please?
Please.
Thank
yes,
you.
It's all yours.
I used to think that big boobs were like...
You realize you didn't
cream.
Answer my question. Younger like when?
How long ago? Younger like junior high?
Oh, you talking
right?
about... Okay.
Yeah, right. He's talking about prehistoric time, right? Oh, Frank, I tell you. Felicia.
I didn't even know they had implants then. Really? I didn't. But,
I'm sorry?
They've been doing
implants forever, right? Oh. So, because then there was this whole thing about silicone breasts, right?
Mm-hmm.
And how they were, in some women, they were getting hard and mm-hmm. stuff. So then they went to saline or something, some kind of solution. Mm-hmm. So, but I used to think that breasts were like it. And I thought that those were, that breasts made women supremely attractive, period.
Mm.
So, I never.
But they do, but it's not the size. It's the nurturing. Breasts are very nurturing, and breasts provide food.
Yes.
In cases of famine, where there's just been a food shortage, a woman's body can provide food.
Sustenance.
So
there's, there we go.
Many reasons for the attraction to breasts, but if you're a woman, you naturally have that. It's not, you're actually cutting off that nurturing natural flow of energy when you cut them open and stick some silicone
something
pads in there.
Yeah.
And they are hard. They're much harder.
Well, they're harder oftentimes because the skin is tight. Because you're making room for something that's like twice the size of what you have the skin capacity to accommodate. So that bag itself is actually, you know.
We did a show on plastic surgery.
Did you?
Pre Nancy.
Okay.
For those of you who were, right. For those of you who are interested, check it out. But, you know, I feel as though plastic surgery, if I could tell you had plastic surgery, it is completely unattractive.
Mm.
If you don't know. I mean, if you don't know, you can't.
Right.
I mean,
right. I mean, there are countless celebrities who've had it, and I was just like, wow, I didn't know that.
Didn't know that Oprah had it until this plastic surgery on that show mentioned it. So,
oh, wow.
I mean,
her.
You didn't know she had a nose job?
No.
Wow.
I mean,
because she's had
obvious.
It evidently so long. Yeah, I didn't know Alicia Keys had a nose job.
Really?
I didn't know that either. Yeah.
But
Michael Jackson, I had no idea.
You know what, Jeff?
Maybe it's because I just, in not a bad way, I don't really look at Oprah. Or I don't really look at Alicia Keys. I mean, maybe if I was sitting there talking to him in person.
Oh, I don't think it's something, at least, and see, you got to get with the nose job. You do the incision in the scalp and you pull the face down and you fix the nose and then you pull it back up so you wouldn't have a clue.
Okay. Wow.
He's a little nauseated by that idea. Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so it's not like they're going to cut you, you're going to see an incision around nose and say, oh, somebody stuck something in there. It's not, it doesn't roll like that.
How'd you know that about Alicia Keys?
I saw, you know how they do these before and afters and who's had plastic surgery. Mm-hmm. And I clicked through and I was like, oh my gosh, I would have never thought that.
You know, facelifts are really the thing that I just,
Because they typically do not go well.
Right. Tight faces and well. Just, it does not. But, I mean, whatever.
Right. You know. Got it. Got
okay. All right. All right.
Onward.
All right. Yes. you say that you, well, you
wait.
Question. What? Go.
Alicia.
Felicia.
Uh-huh.
Felicia. I'm sorry. Now, don't ask me where that came from. I'm all
Alicia Keys. We just talked about Alicia Keys.
Yes. 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 So,
I got it.
Tell me. Tell us what you mean when you say women are supposed to be the spiritual gateway of the relationship. Talk
yeah,
about that.
Yeah, so we know that men and women have different hormones and different, we start the same in the womb and then we become opposite.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Okay, so men are born with sort of a natural coding in their DNA to notice the physical world and to navigate the physical world. So that's why their role is a protector and provisions. They see that more clearly. Women are born with a brain function. Our brain actually gets rewired to see spiritual things in the world. And that's because we're designed to be a nurturer. So we notice flowers, we notice the birds singing easier. Now, both genders can notice both things, but our brain is more wired to take in the spiritual things in the world and to connect with them, and it gives us a feeling. So we feel our way through the world with spiritual guides. And we may not even know that that's what we're doing, but something feels right and I gravitate to it. Those are all spiritual things coming online in us. And so then when a man and woman gets together, a man should experience a higher degree of spirituality by being with that woman. And then that woman should experience a higher degree of just living in the physical world, embodying her physical body even more.
Hmm. Okay.
You got that?
Yeah. Thank you.
What do you say is the, what's the right amount or the right thing to disclose when you're dating someone new or meeting someone new?
It depends on what you want. And it's so important because I think people have been trained to date with strategy. And so that's good if you want quantity. That's good if you just want sort of low-level companionship, then that's fine. You know, so you can not disclose anything and keep it generic and light. And so that reduces conflict, and it's likely that you'll continue to date. But is that what you want, a low-substance relationship where you can't be yourself? No, actually, that's good
yourself.
Sometimes when you just want to go to a movie and dinner, you don't need to be deep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but if you're looking for a fulfilling relationship, if you're looking to go to that level of bliss, you have to disclose and you have to be okay with men leaving that aren't good with it, because if you're going to have something true and something of substance, you have to show up, not your representative who's trying to get validation. So if a man's not okay with certain things, you can part as friends, but he's not the man that should be in your life. Now, some things don't have to be shared on the first date, but you should get a feel for, you kind of want a date to kind of see where he's at. Does he even want a relationship if that's what you're looking for? Is he capable of giving you the things that you know that you need if you're looking at him to stay in your life?
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's important to just date and see the person as they are and go from there. You know, how might you fit in each other's lives and how might you not? There, you can date someone for a long term, but there's just limitations to what you can have together. And just be honest with that, about that.
Here's a philosophical question that I play with. It's, which comes first, revelation or acceptance? How can I accept if you don't reveal? And why would I reveal if I don't think you'll accept?
Yeah, that's
Revelation
true.
Would have to come first.
Revelation, you think?
Well, I'm thinking, then based on what grounds would you not be accepting? If you're not accepting out of the gate, how do you even connect with another human being, let alone somebody you want to date romantically or make a life with?
Mm-hmm. I suspect...
Yeah,
oh, go on.
Go ahead. Well, I think that it's very important to kind of do a quick assessment is, you know, did ego show up or did spirit show up? And so, you know, where did you meet this person? You know, if you met them in yoga class, you know, they're probably someone more accepting and you can reveal more. If you met them at the nightclub, it's probably more of a shallow ego thing and they're not really looking for... you know, too much disclosure. They don't want you to reveal too much. They want you to floss and be impressive, you know? So, and I know that, I mean, those are not all the time, you know, that's a generality.
I was going to say, I think those are a bit oversimplified, but I get your point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we're talking to body image coach, Dr. Felicia Clark, about being self-accepting and also dating. Dr. Clark, please tell us how we can find you and what you're up to.
Sure. I have a website, drfeliciaclark.com, and that gives background and more information. And then also I have bodypeaceuniversity.com. And if you're interested in taking some of the classes that we have, you can take online classes through Body Peace University, because I really believe that women need to relate to our bodies from the spirit of peace and not fight our bodies in the spirit of war. So bodypeaceuniversity.com and then also drfeliciaclark.com.
What are the five secrets to the science of attracting high quality men?
So that's a long answer.
Okay.
But we talked about some of them already, which is being receptive. Receptivity feels like you register as a beautiful woman to a man when you receive his masculine energy. Well,
did I say I love that? Yes. But okay. All right. I did mention that. Okay. Number two.
Well, there's quite a bit, but one of the things, too, is you have to express your feminine essence. A lot of times what we express is what we think other people want from us. It's kind of that sort of pleaser instinct that we have, which is called pretzeling. We call that pretzeling when you just, oh, well, he likes this. I'm going to change myself into this. So what you really want to do is just express yourself true from the core. And you just have to have faith and trust that women are designed to be attractive. So you will attract. You're always attracting. So do you like what you're attracting? And if you do, then keep doing it. If you don't like what you're attracting, then when you truly express yourself, you attract men, situations, life circumstances, true to what you're putting out.
All right. Okay.
The energy that you're putting out. So
number three.
Disclosure, like you said, but again, the just honest communication. So like, it could be your relationship objective, for example, because a lot of times, you know, people teach you strategically, well, don't say you want to get married on the first date or don't tell him that because he'll run. Well, the man who runs, when you say you would like to have a family, he's not going to be the family man, you know. So just honest disclosure, but within reason. I mean, you don't need to go into, you know, an overshare, but you want to be honest and not hide what you really need. The right kind of man who's the right provider, he will want to provide for your needs. And I'm not talking about just financial things, because that's what women have been trained to think of provisions as money, but providing for your well-being, looking after your needs, making sure you're okay. You know, you'll see sort of caretaking behavior, and pay attention to that and just honestly communicate what it is that you need and what you're hoping for. So that's important. And then another thing is make sure you do things where spirit is invited to show up. So like walking your dog in the park is a better date if you're trying to, you know, attract high quality men and bring out the best qualities in the man that you've already attracted. Then do things where spirit can show up. You know, walk by a lake. You know, water is really good. It invites spirit to show up. Spending time in nature, doing fun things where you sort of play and have a spirit of laughter. You know, all of those things help you connect.
You've coined the term body peace. What is body peace?
Women are naturally, from just a little girl age, we're trained to be at war with our bodies. Our bodies don't look right. Our bodies aren't developing right. Our bodies are too big, too small, too non-pleasing. Because we're taught as a little girl, sit pretty, you know, sit there, don't talk, look pretty. And then magic's supposed to happen and our lives are supposed to be amazing if we just sit and look pretty enough. And of course, that's not how it works, but that's what we're trained to do. So we believe and we're socialized that if we change our bodies into whatever society was hoping for, then that's how we get a good life. And so that means we have to be at war with our bodies, because if we didn't get a good life by sitting there looking pretty, then something's wrong with my body. Now, really, something's wrong with that belief system. It's just not true.
Sure.
But we fight our bodies. We war with our bodies. We want to change our bodies into anything that gets validation, that whole pretzeling concept. And so when you stop doing that and understand that you're wonderfully made and just approach your body with the spirit of peace, assuming that everything is how it should be. So how do I work with what I've got? How do I maximize what I've got? And when you do that, just the whole world opens up.
There's some women out there who would love your advice on how to become more attractive in one day.
Mm-hmm.
What do you have?
There are 20 biological features on a woman, actually more than that, but 20 that I teach women that men notice. Men are naturally captivated by a woman. And so
those
20 things to play them up on purpose.
I got
so
three.
So in your group, go ahead.
I got three. Her smile, her breasts, and her derriere. Are those correct?
Didn't that even those on the three? List, Frank?
Well, if that's what you like, then that's what will captivate you. Some men are captivated by hands. There's a whole system of mudras, you know, nail polish color. A man will be captivated and even mesmerized by hands. Some men are mesmerized by a voice. Some men are mesmerized by eyes. So different men will sort of hone in on different features. So you want to strategically pick three things that you like of those 20 features, and then really just learn the science of how to play them up and pick your assets. I have a course called The Goddess Makeover where I teach this, and you strategically pick three things, and that's where you will invest. You will, like, for example, for me, my waist to hip ratio is ideally what men notice is a 70% waist to hip ratio. And so that's something I have. So I intentionally play that up.
It means that your waist
to
hip. You've got some hourglass going.
Hourglass.
And
or,
it doesn't
or
even matter your size.
Figure.
But 70%, I don't know what the 70% means. It means it goes up
24, 36.
For every 7 inches of waist, you have 10 inches of hip.
Gotcha.
Okay.
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 It works.
So if you have, and you don't have to measure perfectly, but if you have that kind of curvature, so that's something that's natural. So then I will, when I want to play that up, I'll wear clothes that accentuate that. And there's a certain type of man that's captivated by that. I understand not every man is, and that's fine with me. So, whatever your lead off features are, just look at your body. What do you have naturally and just play that up. So then looking attractive, you know, to the type of men who are attracted to the things that you have, it's effortless. It's just it's a simple thing. I make a rule that women should, your beautification should only be 15 minutes. Not all the grooming that, you still shower and all those things, but just that sort of that time you spend in the mirror putting on makeup for an hour, you're not going to derive a benefit from that. Mm. You know, an hour of makeup isn't making you more beautiful and attractive in the sense of what you're trying to attract, usually.
What would you... I'm sorry.
No, I'm just saying a lot of women put a lot of effort into things that have no value to masculine men. It's just, you know, of course you need to be groomed and neat, but not, you know, a lot of the things that women compete for beauty with, it's like other women telling you you're not pretty, not men.
Mm-hmm. Mm.
Interesting.
Am I correct that are you saying there are 20 set things that men find attractive on a woman, or for every man there are 20 things and they could be different?
Okay, good question. So biologically, men are attracted to fertility indicators and women have 20 that stand out. Mm-hmm. Every woman has all 20, but some men are sort of more, they hone in on just certain features. They're not all 20 kind of register in their brain as fertility indicators. And fertility, of course, it could mean having a baby. Yes. But also, even when you're past the age of having children, fertility also means life, like life grows from you.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, he experiences more energy for life in your presence. And so some men are nurtured by some things more than others.
Gotcha.
But also 20 is the baseline. But, you know, some men really, really like your voice, or mm-hmm. some men really, really like your eyes, or whatever it is.
Gotcha. You're listening to Frank Relationships, and we've been talking to body image coach Dr. Felicia Clark about self-acceptance and dating. Dr. Clark, one more time, please tell us what you're up to and how we can find you.
You can find me at drfeliciaclark.com, and you can find me at bodypeaceuniversity.com if you'd like to take some of my coaching classes. And as always, check out my Huffington Post blog. Just log on to Huffington Post and search Dr. Felicia Clark, and you'll find my blog.
Along today's journey, we've discussed the power of receptivity, sexy versus spiritual, and the futility of plastic surgery.
Mm.
Thank you to my co-host, Nancy. Thanks to Jeff Newman, my engineer. And thank you to my guest, Dr. Felicia Clark. You have been great. I hope you've had as much fun as I've had hanging out with today's ensemble. As always, it's my wish for you to walk away from this conversation with a heaping helping of useful information that'll help you create a relationship that's as loving and accepting as possible. Let us know what you thought of today's show at Facebook.com/RelationshipFLove, on Twitter at Mr., that's M-R Frank Love, or at franklove.com. If you're listening via Blog Talk Radio, make sure you like us there, and if via iTunes, make sure you subscribe, so that you can receive each week's show. This is Frank Love.